sweet chocolate, chocolate balls, candy, gumdrops, anything you want. You've come to the right man because I'm the candy man. Ooh. Who can take a sunrise?
Who can take a sunrise?
Sprinkle it with you.
Sprinkle it with you.
Cover it with chocolate and a miracle or two. The Candyman.
17 minutes past the hour here on the home of Alabama Sports. Tide 99 What. I'm Chris Stewart, and all the Candyman himself, live from somewhere between there and the offices of the Reese's Senior Bowl, Phil Savage, checking in. Dr. Savage, how are you?
I'm good, Chris. That's the first intro music that I've ever gotten from the Candyman.
Get
from Sammy Davis Jr.
Get used to it. We may have found something. Hey, have you gotten back to Mobile yet? Talked to you this morning. You were in Atlanta. How close are you?
No, I'm in Atlanta for the day, and
okay.
I'm going to the Falcons and Bucks game tonight. I had some Senior Bowl business to attend to here in Atlanta this morning and midday, and then I'll head over to T-Town tomorrow for a showdown with the Gators and the Crimson.
I joked on air earlier that I've been in your office this week longer than you have, because I had a chance to drop in yesterday and see it. By the way, I've never been in that building before, never seen it. Unbelievable. Congratulations. What a gorgeous place. It's like a mini museum that you walk into there in your lobby, and good night. The history, I know the history of the Senior Bowl by and large, having grown up in this state, but what an incredible way to bring people into your office, man, as they come in there and see the place.
Yeah, it's a nice workspace in downtown Mobile. And, of course, last weekend with Mississippi State coming in to play South Alabama at Ladd Peebles Stadium, that brought up a lot of memories for Alabama fans because Coach Bryant's first game as the coach for Alabama was in 1958 in Mobile against LSU. And then, of course, the last time an SEC team had played in Mobile was in 1968 when Alabama beat Southern Miss. So it brought up a lot of history, and we love our spot there in downtown. And you're welcome anytime to drop in. I just hope I'm there next time.
Me too. But staff took good care of me. It was great to see a lot of friends down there. Hey, real quick, for our listeners, they hear you all over the place, but kind of run through just this week, and I know I ask you this a good bit, but I do think it's so interesting. I'm a guy that's got a lot of things to juggle, but I'm not having to juggle through airports like you are. Walk us through from the time the game ended last Saturday in Tuscaloosa against Southern Miss. I saw you post game, but from Sunday on, what's going on for your week?
Well, during football season, Chris, really I'm on sort of an every other week travel schedule. So Sunday morning I drove back down to Mobile and Fairhope after the ball game, worked on all of my Alabama, Florida notes and stuff Sunday night. Had an office day with the Senior Bowl on Monday. We have our own locker room show every Monday from 5 to 6. And so in transit from there, I ended up flying up to Hartford, Connecticut, had a day at ESPN on Tuesday, and of course that is mostly NFL oriented talk and conversation, and obviously with the news about Ray Rice and Greg Hardy and Adrian Peterson, there hasn't been a lot of football talk over the last few weeks in terms of the NFL. But I spent Tuesday there, and then yesterday I had the occasion to go to Harvard University. They actually have a defensive end outside linebacker named Zach Hodges that could probably play in the Alabama-Florida game on Saturday. I mean, he's that talented. He's definitely going to be drafted. So I wanted to see him for the Senior Bowl and did that yesterday and then flew to Atlanta this morning and, again, some more Senior Bowl business and another NFL exposure to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Atlanta Falcons. And then I'll buzz over tomorrow morning to Tuscaloosa when Jack Arute and I will hook up for a SiriusXM show 12 to 3 Central, and then get ready for Saturday's kickoff with another tailgate show. Mark Packer and I will do Sirius on Saturday morning, 8 to 11 Central Time, and then be right there at the stadium for Alabama and Florida at 2:30. So it's a busy week, but I love what I'm doing. It's a lot of fun, and I feel extremely fortunate and blessed to get a chance to do all these different things. It's been a blast.
I was going to say, throw that in with a drop-dead gorgeous wife and beautiful child, and life is good for Phil Savage these days. I know that. I'm so happy for you, man. Let's talk about that real quick. Falcons, Bucks. I just want a real quick thought from you on that as they go into that matchup tonight.
Well, of course, Atlanta is 1-1. They had a big opening win and then went up to Cincinnati and did not play well at all last weekend. And, of course, Tampa Bay has lost their first two games of the year at home. And Mark Barron is on that team. Julio Jones, of course, is on the Falcons team. But this is probably a win for the Falcons, I would suspect. They usually play well at home. Matt Ryan will likely have a bounce-back performance after three interceptions last Sunday. But Julio and Roddy White, who played at UAB, are a big part of their scheme offensively, of course. And then Mark Barron will have the charge of trying to slow down this Falcon attack tonight.
Phil Savage joining us, as all of our guests do, on the Bud Light Hotline presented by Green Beverage. I've got to get you to put the GM hat on for a moment. I know a million things can happen, good and bad, between now and draft day. But in the event Jameis Winston opts to come out at the end of this year, he will obviously be, barring something else, in consideration for a very, very high, if not the number one draft pick, Phil. My question is he in a spot still, does he still have time, if not to undo, at least mend enough fences so that a general manager, a franchise, can tell Roger Goodell or whoever the commissioner is at that time, this is the guy we want to take number one?
He's got enough time to repair himself to a degree, but Chris, yesterday's episode was the fifth public incident that we're aware of. Some have been minor, others have been certainly more major in nature. And I think the thing that was so alarming about yesterday was the fact that, in light of the environment that we've been in over the last week or so, and specifically the last three or four days, to stand up on a table and say the words that he said, in a public forum like that, as the face of not only the football program, but maybe even the entire university, it was despicable. And I think it's laughable to keep propping him up there in those press conferences that are really not believable anymore. We've seen five of them now that related to these different episodes, and it seems as if you could just push replay. So I don't want to sound like I'm piling on here, but as strictly an NFL general manager, there are a lot of people in the league that really question this young man's awareness, maturity, and I don't know if that they're buying in that he can be the face of an NFL franchise in light of what the league is having to go through right now.
Vernon Hargraves, Amari Cooper, two other guys that we're going to see squared off that before too much longer could be, you know, top five picks. That give me your thoughts on that matchup. Just one of several we'll be looking at for the Tide and the Gators.
Well, I think it's going to be real interesting to see how Florida uses Vernon Hargraves. You would expect him to match up with Amari Cooper regardless of where Amari lines up, whether he's stationary or moving in motion, what have you. But these are the two of the most gifted athletes in the country. I mean, there are very few corners out there that can stay with Amari Cooper, but Vernon Hargraves III is one of them. I mean, he's very quick-footed, he's fast, he's got great ball skills, tremendous instinct on the field, and so that's going to be one of the biggest matchups of the entire season in terms of two really, really elite players.
Got to get your take as the old quarterback yourself. Here's Blake Sims, and I contend that if it's Jake Coker who's put up the numbers that Blake Sims has to date, Phil, he may be a top three or four candidate for the Heisman right now. just kind of your evaluation. Where is Blake? And I think we're all kind of surprised that he's there and hoping he can sustain what he's done so far.
Well, there's no doubt he's played very well so far, hitting 75% of his passes. He's judiciously used his legs. He has been a pass-first, run-second type of quarterback so far. I don't think people believe that he could do that. This will be a tremendous challenge Saturday with Florida. This is a defense that can fly to the football. And if Hargraves can, in fact, slow down and take away Amari Cooper to a degree, then Alabama is going to need other players to step forward. And Blake Sims is going to have to step forward and, again, use that athletic ability to move the chains. I think third downs are going to be huge in this game. And the key to it is what kind of production you can have on first down. Because if Bama stays on schedule and faces those third and three, third and four, third and five situations, Blake Sims can operate and do well. But if they're facing third and seven plus, that's where Florida really gets exotic. They usually have some sort of surprise pressure package that you have not prepared for. And so that would really put Alabama in a negative situation if they can't be productive on first down. But I would agree with you. Blake has played very well. But I do think it's a wise move by Nick Saban and the coaching staff to keep both quarterbacks engaged, involved, because at some point there probably will be a rainy day, if you will, where one or the other quarterbacks is not playing particularly well, and they're going to need one or the other to bail them out. And I think that's why you've got to keep Jake Coker involved and at the ready, because you just never know what's going to happen on a given Saturday.
Last thing, and I'll let you run. We know that an area of concern has been the secondary for Alabama, but is Florida good enough to take advantage of that?
In places they are, Chris. You know, I've said all week that I think this may be the most improved position unit in the entire Southeastern Conference. The emergence of DeMarcus Robinson so far, had 15 catches against Kentucky the other night. Quentin Dunbar comes back with a lot of experience. He's caught a pass in, I want to say, 30 straight games. So they have some weapons. This is the best group of receivers Florida has had in at least the last half dozen years, because it's been a position devoid of production over the last three or four years. But this group has a chance. Ahmad Fullwood in the slot, Valdez Showers in the slot. These guys don't have a lot of numbers, but they know what to do with the football. And that's one of the real keys for Florida with Kurt Roper as their new offensive coordinator. He's making Jeff Driskel get rid of the football very quickly. So he's not going to have Driskel drop 7 and 9 steps and hold the football. They're going to get it out of his hand and get it to these playmakers on the perimeter. So I think they're very improved, very much improved. You cannot go by what happened last weekend against Kentucky, because Kentucky plays a different style of ball than Alabama. The Gators and the Tide, look at it. You've got Nick Saban and Will Muschamp. They both have this, come from the same school of thought. The two teams are built in a very similar manner. I think it's going to be really a heck of a ball game.